This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Gather round.
Welcome to episode 2 of Collateral Damage, presented by The Dossier. Along with your co-host, Nicole Luciano, this is Johnny the Greek. Thanks for joining us once again as we touch on some current event topics, some infamous murders, and a listener email. So, Nikki, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Ready to jump right back in the thick of this thing. And unlike last week, where we really wanted to introduce ourselves to the listeners, give a little bit of background before we dive into some of these cases, today we decided we wanted to start off with some current events. And the current event in particular popped up on, what was it, Friday of last week, I believe, when you sent me the link to this podcast?
Oh, yeah.
Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the podcast in question that we're talking about?
All right. So, John, Friday I sent you a clip from YouTube. It was from the PVD podcast. And I'm loving that this Shug publicity tour is just rolling through all of these different podcast appearances. The collect call he did a couple days later. I know some of our Dossier listeners had messaged it to us and wanted us to follow the link. And I think Shug's had enough. I don't know how you feel. I feel like Shug's had enough.
Well, I think it depends on what we're talking about. I think with regards to a certain YouTube channel and the co-hosts of that YouTube channel, I think he has absolutely had enough. And I am here for it. I am so thoroughly enjoying this little YouTube/podcast beef between Shug and a former employee or two of his. Like, it literally makes my night listening to these two fight with each other. I will say, as I stand on this hill continually, I think Shug is somewhat full of shit when it comes to the Biggie murder. And I also got, besides the amazing content Shug has been giving us over these recent weeks with Collect Call and now this interview he did last weekend on the PBD podcast, Shug has a way of accidentally self-snitching and helping corroborate some of the stuff that we have brought up. It's kind of weird. It's almost like Shug is listening to season 2 of The Dossier, because about a week after we focused on how strange it was that Donald Ray, an attorney with death row ties, ends up defending David Mack in his bank robbery case, Shug goes on Collect Call and is bragging to his co-host Dave Mays about his personal relationship with Donald Ray and how he personally got Donald Ray on board to defend Snoop in his murder trial. So, Shug, thank you for confirming your relationship with Donald Ray. That really ties the loose ends together with regards to how David Mack ends up with a $1 million attorney in his bank robbery case. About a week later, or maybe about a week after we did our Kevin Gaines bonus episode, Shug confirms the fact that he won't say their names ever, Sharitha or Kevin Gaines. He said his Snoop's manager was dating a cop who basically helped get Snoop off of those murder charges. So once again, Shug, thank you for confirming our journalism.
You know, John, I'm going to interrupt you here. You know, I'm going to do that. Probably not polite, but let me just interject this here. So again, going back to my little soft spot for Shug, is Shug listening to our podcast and confirming these things, as you would think, you know, subliminally, without actually addressing them? Or is Shug actually getting the real story of what happened to him through our podcast? And as he's putting these pieces together, is starting to speak out about it? Because I'm starting to think it might be the latter.
Listen, again, this is a hill that I will die on, and not just me. Phil Carson, Sergio Robledo, Russell Poole.
I understand.
Richard Valdemar. We're all dying on the hill that Suge orchestrated the Biggie murder. Right. But I will say, when it comes to all the other crap, I am ready to agree. Suge got fucked by certain factions inside Death Row Records. I think it's very possible that those crooked cops that were tied up with Suge and Death Row Records may have wanted a little, one cop in particular, may have wanted a little payback on Suge, and maybe that's what happened in the Tupac murder. I'm not sitting here saying that Suge didn't get screwed every which way but Sunday at some point by the princes who wanted to be kings, we'll call them. But yes. Again, when it comes to Biggie, unless me and these four investigators who we have based so much of our work around are all batshit crazy, I think Suge trying to claim he wasn't involved in Biggie's murder is borderline laughable.
Well, here's what I'm going to say about that. And I'm going to play devil's advocate here. Again, going back to what I have thought, I don't think that Suge was calling all the shots. And to be honest with you, nobody was telling Suge the truth. They were afraid of him. And when I look at it from that perspective, I don't rule it out that Suge could have had involvement with that hit. But I also, and no, I don't say that. I think he was. I will rest in full conviction on the fact that, yes, Suge had something to do with the hit. But do I think that Suge had all of the correct knowledge in order to make that call? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Who knows what he was being poisoned with? Who knows who was saying what? At the end of the day, I still believe that what happened in Vegas with Tupac was a botched assassination attempt on Suge from parties that knew him in an attempt to gain access to Death Row Records' entire catalog, the entire, you know, club scene that Suge was running, his real estate and everything else, all right? Because you have to have a motive in a murder. You have to.
Nikki, you have just teed something up when talking about motive, and it's something that we want to focus this episode on in our crime and hip hop cases of the past. And when we get back from paying a few bills, we are going to focus on what may have been not just the motive for the Biggie murder and the attempted Puffy murder on March 9th, 1997, but maybe, just maybe, this was the motive that kicked off the whole East versus West blood feud that began in 1995.
Immerse yourself in the fascinating tale of Song of Solomon by the legendary Pulitzer Prize-winning author Toni Morrison, a mesmerizing coming-of-age masterpiece that has captivated readers around the world. Follow the protagonist, Milkman Dead, who was born shortly after a neighborhood eccentric hurled himself off a roof in a vain attempt at flight. For the rest of his life, Milkman, too, will be trying to fly. As Morrison follows Milkman on a quest to uncover his roots and himself in his Rust Belt hometown, to the place of his family's origins, she introduces an entire cast of Shrivers and Cirruses, liars and assassins, the inhabitants of a fully realized black world. As the New Yorker put it, Morrison moves easily in and out of the lives and thoughts of her characters, luxuriating in the diversity of circumstances and personality. Whether you're a seasoned reader or new to Toni Morrison, Song of Solomon is a must-read that will ignite your imagination and leave you wanting to read more Morrison. Song of Solomon, a timeless tale that will stay with you long after you've turned its final page. Available now at tonimorrison.com and wherever books are sold. All right, so life doesn't happen bi-weekly, so why should payday? The money you earn can be in your hands today with EarnIn. EarnIn is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the EarnIn app and verify your paycheck. Then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. So maybe you need to get your kids something special, or you and the wife need a scintillating night out every once in a while, at least. So download EarnIn today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the EarnIn app, type in the dossier under podcast. EarnIn is a financial technology company, not a bank. Subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Anyway, they had like their little words, right? All right? And they went outside and they went in the middle of the street.
They were in the middle with Puff
the
and
middle,
Shug?
The middle of the street, Puff and Shug.
Wow.
Outside in Atlanta.
And this is at your party.
Yeah.
Is it a calm conversation or they?
No, it's not a calm conversation.
Okay.
But it's not just them. It's a very hostile conversation.
Okay. And their crews is
ain't no crew. I mean, Shug has got one person.
Oh.
Puff got a crew.
Oh.
Shug got one dude with him.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
And all I know is Puff started drinking his champagne while they was talking, and I guess somebody champagne. Must have said something to him. Mm-hmm. And next thing I know, you know, Wolf, rest in peace, you know, he let off a shot and let off a couple of shots, and Suge Man got killed right there.
Wow.
In Atlanta.
Wow. God
that was bless. The beginning of that whole shit.
Wow.
Like, I mean, it started at the Source Wars, but I'm saying for
like get, some real
once it got real.
So you're saying like Big and maybe Pac might have been like.
They ain't had nothing to do with this.
Yeah, but it affected, like, it's.
Yeah, it went into that, but they ain't had nothing to do with this. Right. This was all, like, CEO to CEO shit.
Wow.
Welcome back to Collateral Damage. We are going to look at what really started everything when it comes to the death row, bad boy beef, the blood that was spilled, the murders that were to follow. This all really started, I mean, some people look back at Quad Studios and the events that occurred on November 30th of 1994. That's fair. Some people look at Suge Knight striding up on stage at the Source Awards in August of 1995 and uttering that famous speech.
And one other thing I'd like to say, any artist out there want to be an artist and want to stay a star and don't want to have to worry about the executive producer trying to be all in the video, all on the record, dancing, come to Death Row.
Then, 3 weeks later, following Suge saying all that at the Source Awards, Suge Knight and one of his close friends and main muscle guys, Jake Robles, heads on down to Atlanta for a birthday party being thrown by Jermaine Dupri. Also attending that birthday party were, and we'll call him Puffy because at the time he was known as Puffy, Puffy Combs and his main muscle, Anthony Wolf Jones. When this was over with, Suge's best friend was lying dead. And the bad boy death row beef had become deadly serious. So, Nikki, why don't you tee up our listeners with some of the details that you've been able to dig up?
Yeah, definitely. So Wolf, actually, he was pretty well known in Atlanta. He had a lot of ties. He had a lot of people there. And he was kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? He was putting people on the map. I think that's the way to say it. Would you agree with that? That he was just sort of putting people on the scene? So at this point, Puffy ain't shit. At this time, it's 1995, so he really ain't shit yet. And all he's got on his label is Biggie. And so he's kind of like the promoter, and he's the manager, and he's, you know, walking around like he thinks he's somebody, and everyone's kind of like, who is this dude? And so Wolf, of course, that's his dude. So he's like, nah, Diddy or Puffy, you're good. He's like, nah, Puffy, we're fine. So basically what goes down is they're here. Now, Jake had just been hired by Suge. He had just gotten out of prison. He's doing some marketing stuff for Death Row.
My name is Jake, you know what I'm saying? I'm from Westside, Campanella Park, Piru, you know. Been, you know, doing this here type of lifestyle since I was about 13 years old, you know, and been through the penitentiary systems, all the juvenile system, 5 years, 6 years in the state, you know, and I'm just gonna kick a little something. Everybody wanna know why people bang, why people kill, why people do this, sell dope, and you can't just look at the individuals, because, you know, you have to look at the environment that they're set in that creates these conditions for them to have to live and do the things that they do. And so we just kicking it like that. You know, we ain't out here essing on our chest, but, you know, it's like everybody out here want to be a tough guy, killer, a gangster. You understand?
They go to this, you know, party for Jermaine Dupri. Now, this is where it gets interesting. They arrive at the Platinum Club. They're on West Peachtree Street. Anyone from Atlanta knows what I'm talking about. It's great over there. And somehow a fight breaks out, some kind of altercation between both crews. And it's a little weird the way it kind of reads to me, because there's not a lot of information on this at all. And what I really found interesting is like the different witness testimony. And so none of this really comes out until the nightclub shooting, right? I think, what was that, 99?
Yeah.
With J-Lo. So everyone's kind of taking the stands. And what's interesting is that Big Jake got out of the car, right? Because, are you ready for this? Who do you think was running your mouth?
I would assume you're talking about Puffy.
Of course. So, of course, Puffy, you know, gets out of the car and he's being all, you know, I'm who I am. And he's like, what's up? What's up? Blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden, everybody starts arguing. Then they're screaming. Then Diddy is screaming, yo, what the fuck is up? And so what? So what? So what? And next thing you know, Big Jake gets out of the car. And he starts taking, you know, jabs at Puffy's camp. They're arguing back and forth, and so they're banging on each other a little bit. And now it's Wolf and Suge eye to eye staring at each other, and they're just kind of like not talking, just looking at each other. And then next thing you know, shots ring out. And what does Puffy do, John?
My guess is he ducked and jumped in the limousine to get the hell out of there.
Absolutely correct. Put it on the board. It's the first time Puffy somehow is supposed to be the target and escapes unscathed. Okay. So Big Jake is shot and killed. And someone just remembers him saying, you know, he was kind of freaking out. He was like, you know, really kind of in shock. And they were telling him, like, don't move, don't move, don't move. They asked to, you know, call an ambulance. Now, the interesting thing is, Big Jake's on DOA. He's not dead on arrival. He doesn't die that night. Do you know when he dies?
I believe it was about a week later. He'd been on life support.
Just like Tupac. Is that funny how that mirrors?
Yeah. You know, the one thing that's, well, there's a number of interesting things that come from this that you'll get into in just a minute. But obviously, we know what came after this. Within days, a guy by the name of Mark Anthony Bell is being contacted by someone, an anonymous figure, most likely representing Death Row Records, trying to buy the location of Sean Combs and his mother's homes in New York. We know that this really was the jump off point and the real ugly, fatal violence sprang out of this. But there are a number of conflicting reports with what actually went down that night. We have two different scenarios, both given by law enforcement officials. The one, like you said, this was all kind of started by Puffy and his mouth and everything else. But another law enforcement official said that this actually began in the club between Wolf, Big Jake, Suge, and there was some yapping. The promoter and the security then took Wolf and whoever else Wolf was with. He was not with Puffy at the time. Out as a former nightclub owner, I can tell you this is protocol. When you have an altercation, you take one group out, you wait 10 minutes until you know they have left the premises, and then you take the other group out. And that appears what was going on. But according to this law enforcement official, it was at the time that Suge and Jake were being escorted out that Puffy arrived at the party in a limousine, got out of the car, and that's where words were exchanged with Puffy, Suge, Jake, Wolf, whoever else was involved. And at this point, the law enforcement officer says he tried to chase off Puffy's guys, and that includes Wolf, and all of a sudden he gets back and Big Jake is laying on the ground paralyzed and, you know, in the process of dying a week later. Now, what another version comes from one of our favorite people, Eugene Deal.
I've heard Wolf talk about it, and Wolf told me personally that he didn't do it. And I know everybody knew the guy who did it. It was this dude, he's dead now. He got killed in Atlanta about 2 or 3 years ago. His father was from the Bronx and he owned the cleaners. Now, did Wolf and them know him? Yeah, they probably knew him. He was from the Bronx, his part of town. His father owned the cleaners. They knew this guy. You understand? Him and Jake was arguing over this chick or whatever. Now, did Wolf do it? How could Wolf do it when he was next to Suge? He was right next to Suge when Jake got killed. But everybody want to say Wolf did it because that glamorized the situation.
We do know now that Suge slapped Jermaine Dupri at that party. So that could all check out. It could be like part, I mean, it sounds like it's kind of a combination of both. Maybe he slapped Jermaine Dupri and security escorted them out. And then it was like another second altercation. And that's how this all went down as Puffy arrived. Like maybe it was like two different scenarios and Wolf was only involved in one, but kind of took the hit. It would make sense though, if Wolf was already at the club and whatever it was, that he kind of got in the middle of all of it, trying to keep the peace. So it sounds like it's kind of a mixture of both, but I don't think we're ever going to know, are we?
I don't think so. The interesting thing too, is some of the law enforcement documents you sent me, is Wolf had a relationship with a lot of Atlanta area police officers because of the security work he did in and around these clubs and guarding different hip hop personalities and things like that. So it's a very weird mix. And just to make it a little bit weirder, when we were going through the FBI documents with regards to the Biggie investigation, there was actually this paragraph that threw both of us for a loop. And it states, there's a little blurb about the, you know, Suge Knight accuses Puffy Combs for the Atlanta murder of Hassan Jake Robles. Suge was with Robles when he was fatally shot, which was the result of an argument between Death Row and Bad Boy employees. Here's the part that's interesting. According to a local police officer, Orlando Anderson, a.k.a. Baby Lane, was identified as being involved in this killing. That threw me for an enormous loop. Now, in the same paragraph, we also have Detective Kevin Aquinas, who was part of the NYPD FBI Task Force, a.k.a. the Hip Hop Cops, who stated that Anthony Jones, a.k.a. Wolf, was also involved in this murder. So once again, we have a murder that's going to be 30 years old next year. And we have a bunch of whispers. And at the end of the day, no fucking idea who killed Jake Robles and started this war.
This is what's interesting is, I guess nowadays, so here in Chicago, you know, it's like when two gangs fight with each other and they retaliate, they call it mutual combat, right? So basically, if one person dies in one murder and then the other person dies as the retaliation, it's cleared administratively by using this term mutual combat, which is kind of fucked up in a sense because we're not fighting for our country. We're fighting over two blocks on the west side of Chicago. Right. But that's kind of like what happened here because it looks like after he was killed, right? So like after Wolf was killed, the detective cleared the case. So it was like, this really kind of interesting thing. As soon as he got killed, they cleared it. So what year did he get killed? Let's just be factual.
2003, I believe, was. And just like, you know, there's so many weird coincidences throughout this story. Wolf was actually killed at a nightclub in Atlanta, Georgia, of all places, after an altercation, I believe, with some of the guys from Black Mafia family.
True. Big Meech. But that's like not the most interesting part to me. Do you want to know what was the most interesting
part? Absolutely.
Is one, they had a double funeral for Wolf and his friend who were both killed, right? So that's kind of a sight that you don't see often. Like, usually if two people are killed, you have separate wakes and funerals. If they're not married and killed in the same situation or family, so to have both friends, and I guess they had gray matching caskets. That sounds like some Puffy shit if I ever heard it. But there was a gun bust at that funeral.
Was it really?
Yeah. There was some kind of gun bust at that funeral. And on top of it, guess who else was at the funeral?
Who?
That was your trick question. The feds were at the funeral. Oh. That was your thing. But I'm wondering if this is what they were talking about. However, other interesting piece of information on all of this. The feds were watching the whole thing. And so I think this might go into a little bit of what we're learning these days with Diddy and Homeland Security and kind of this like deep background, is they were surveilling the whole thing. And the part about this that I really kind of hit home is that the funeral home is the Campbell Funeral Home. They have handled the arrangements for John Lennon, Jackie Kennedy, Aaliyah, and Biggie.
That's incredible.
So imagine what it must be like for Puff to keep seeing all these people be basically memorialized at the same place over and over because he can't fucking stay out of his own lane. So I thought that you would like that tidbit and the fact that they were being surveilled and the FBI was present and there was a gun raid there. It was a huge gun bust. I want to say they didn't give too much information, but the cops definitely raided the whole thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is interesting.
All right. But you know what? We do have to talk about John because you did pique my interest today and I've been very busy with work. You need to fill me in on the Mickey Thompson murder. You got me all excited earlier today and I had to disappear for a few hours with this Mickey Thompson murder.
The grisly killings happened here in the Thompson's driveway, gunshots shattering the early morning silence of this exclusive neighborhood in Los Angeles.
It was an assassination type thing. They didn't rob him. They didn't take anything. They just killed him. And the neighbors heard them, Mickey yelling, "Don't hurt my wife. Don't hurt my wife."
You know what? We'll just call him Charles. I don't think it would be a good idea to just start airing people's full names out on the podcast. But a listener named Charles emailed us and asked us to touch on the murders of Mickey Thompson and his wife in 1988. Now, you might be asking why the murder of a former race car driver and auto parts magnate would have anything to do with hip hop or any of the stories that we tell. Well, that might not be the case. Okay, so in 1988, Mickey Thompson and his wife in their upscale Los Angeles neighborhood are getting ready to leave their home. It's about sometime between 6 and 7 a.m. And all of a sudden, two African-American gentlemen ride up on brand new 10-speed bicycles. And they execute Mickey Thompson and his wife. We actually have a little soundbite here from one of the eyewitnesses describing what she saw. And I'll let you guys listen to that right now.
She had fallen, she had her hands up, and she was saying, "Please, please, no, no." And they didn't stop.
The family next door, awakened by gunfire, watched it all in horror.
Mickey saw all that and he was still alive. And then they killed him too.
For a minute, I was frozen because I was so stunned about what I was looking at.
Allison was only 12. She is speaking publicly for the first time about what she saw.
Took his time, too. He wasn't in a hurry. He just kind of slowly took the gun right there and just kind of left it there. and then bam.
So why, do you ask, does this have anything to do with the dossier or Suge or the Bloods or anything else? Well, once we got a look at the suspect drawings, the composites, they bear a remarkable resemblance to David Mack and Amir Muhammad. I know you're all sitting there saying, John, you fucking lost it. Yeah, this is such a reach. This is such a stretch. There's a little more information I should give you. When David Mack, actually, I should probably preface this by saying in 1999, a gentleman, a former business partner by the name of Michael Goodwin, was convicted of ordering the murders of Mickey Thompson and his wife. When David Mack was arrested for the bank robbery in December of 1997, among the first people to contact David Mack while he was being held at the Montebello City Jail was none other than Mike Goodwin, who sent David Mack a note saying, anything you need, just let me know. So now we've got a guy who was convicted of ordering the murders of his former business partners, reaching out to David Mack while he's in Montebello County Jail. The suspect drawings are fucking identical, especially the one that looks like David Mack. And apparently, Russell Poole wanted to investigate this. He also believed it was a possibility that this may have been one of the first contract killings committed by Mack and Muhammad. You'll be shocked to know that the one and only Bernard Parks and his cronies told them they were absolutely not allowed to go down that road. So here we sit all these years later saying, boy, that suspect sure looks a hell of a lot like David Mack. But it is a story that needs following up on and needs further investigation.
Yeah, I have to say, John, in the very beginning when you started telling me this, I was like, oh, come on. But then I like read, and now I'm trying to go back because I do think we need to put a little bit behind this. One, the jail visit, cool, fine, whatever. But the fact that they mentioned a football team in one of those articles. And the other thing was like the very first comment I read on that unsolved page was like, it's been widely speculated that this was David Mack and Amir Muhammad. So once again, going back to episode one, we could find DNA off a pizza box, but we cannot find anything that puts anyone, including Poochie Faust, at Biggie's murder. And this is, again, another prime example. 1988, early 2000s, case closed, convicted, solved. And so I'm just going to go back to City of Lies and that great line Johnny Depp throws out is that a case like this only goes unsolved if the police don't want to solve it.
Bingo. That is a great way to put it. That's a great way to put a pin on this episode. I will leave our listeners with this. I have tracked down a woman who, at the time of the Mickey Thompson murders, was a young girl. She is one of the ones that helped with the composite sketches of the suspects. I have tracked her down, and I am in the process of sending her photographs of one David Mack and one Amir Muhammad to see if they resemble the two men that she watched execute her next door neighbors in 1988. Obviously, we will keep you all posted of any developments with regards to that case.
I mean, that would be some wild shit, John. Could you imagine? Like, imagine if we, oh God, that would be good. I want that Dateline. I'm producing that Dateline. Nobody else is fucking touching it. I'm saying it right now.
It's ours.
Stand back. Stand down. Stand down. You heard me, YouTubers. You heard me, bloggers. If I find this on some kind of live stream later, like my Peterson picture, there's going to be hell to pay, okay? And I got pitchforks. I got it all. I'm coming for all of you. I'm doing the Dateline.
Nikki, any final points before we sign off for the week?
Final point here. I just told you guys to stand down on all of these new developments that John just brought to the table. So with that being said, again, our Patreon has an exclusive dossier hoodie. I don't even have it. John has it. And I don't really like to watch any of these live streams that basically just take the work that we did and kind of blow it up. So I'll tell you guys what. If you guys see it and pop the link in our inbox on Instagram and you are the first person to do it, I'm going to send you one of those exclusive hoodies. And then you will even be before me in wearing it. But make sure you're checking out our Patreon. Make sure you're checking the things we're posting. It's not expensive to sign up. It's actually free. All right. And if you guys want some of the other perks, it's only a couple of bucks. We're not doing anything but making you listen to ads to get this done at this point. So check us out. Show some support as you always do. And again, one more final thought. If any of you people out there are listening, you know, Shug, Tom, I want to talk to him. Okay. And part two, if any of you are now making your own YouTube channels and videos and stuff like that, and you'd like to use content or interview John, myself, or Don, please reach out to us. We like to collaborate with people and we want to see you be creative, and we encourage you to write and to edit and all of those wonderful things. We will be there for you 100%. Ask permission and we will be there. That's all you have to do is ask.
Very well said. Listeners, thank you once again for joining us. As Nikki said, let me echo this. If you want more content, documents, exclusive audio, exclusive video, subscribe to our Patreon page. It's patreon.com/dossier. We actually dropped the long lost LAPD Blues documentary, the PBS Frontline doc that LAPD made disappear for close to 20 years. You can actually check that out in its entirety now on our Patreon page. We will be back next week. See you then.